and I see a clock counting down, so in fact we did start. I spent last night the whole night picking the perfect music to play before my talk, because to get us all in the mood, and I decided to play, you know, like some music from a Dutch band. And of course, music is not working on my laptop, so that's a great start. Yesterday I saw some presentations where PowerPoint failed. Hopefully my demos will work later on. And hopefully we're going to answer two questions this morning. Why and how? And the why is, why would I want to use C or C++ inside a Windows Phone application? The how is, of course, how are we going to use that C++ functionality inside a Windows Phone application? I could also ask a difference, like why? Why are we here? How? How do I win a phone? The answer to that one is going to be very easy. Just stick around until the very end. If you like this session and you remember that at the end of this session, please fill out your evaluation forms. I would love to travel back next year for Tech at North America as well, especially since I am a partner technology manager working for Microsoft, but for Windows Embedded. So I have, in my daily work, not that much to do with Windows Phone, actually, but I love talking about Windows Phone. But to set the stage, I think, you know, like before showing an agenda and before showing mandatory slides that we all have to, you know, like kind of click through, I think it's, you know, like I want to do things different. So I think it's time for a demo. So let me see if my demo machine is working. And I don't need that sound, actually. And this is a beautiful device. And now let's take a road, you know, like let's go back on memory lane and let's say go back 20 years or something. I was working at a completely different company at that time, and I was developing software using a language, C and C++. And my boss at that time asked me to, you know, like create this math library. And one of the requirements was, but I didn't know at that time, one of the requirements was like, well, you create that math library, and 20 years from now it has to run on Windows Phone 8. Which was pretty amazing that he knew that there was something like Windows Phone 8. I mean, that was brilliant. So I decided to create that math library. I'm going to show you the library. Unfortunately, my screen size is going to be a little bit limited, but hey, this is an operating system that's pretty awesome. I can start the operating system. And it's going to take some time, of course. But then you have something called MS-DOS. We're going to check extended memory. I have a whole whopping 32 megabytes of memory inside my machine. And at those days, Windows was cool, because Windows was not, in my opinion, an operating system, but it was a graphical environment, and you had to start it yourself. So if I started Windows, now it's all happening magically and automatically, but what I did was enter win, or create a batch file, and in that way, start Windows. And there it is. Isn't that cool? You don't need a start button or anything that we are discussing these days with Windows 8. It's just there, and it's just working. So the next step is to actually start my development environment, Visual C++ 1.52. And I was working in C++. And at that time, you know, like this is a 16-bit operating system. If you were manipulating pointers and stuff like that, you had to deal with segments and offsets to that segment. So you could address 64 kilobytes each and every time, and then increase your segment register, and then you had another bunch of 64 kilobytes. And you could manipulate code directly. So I could, you know, like change pointers to point to something completely different. And that's probably also the reason why we used and still probably use this kind of a programming language environment for automation of nuclear power plants, for rockets that need to, you know, like land on the moon or something. So the thing is, if you think about it, if I'm at parties, you know, like people are always telling these crazy stories, like, oh, gosh, what are you doing for a living? Oh, I'm a rocket scientist. And everybody is like, well, boring. Oh, I work at a nuclear power plant, and everybody is boring. And then they ask me that same question, like, what are you doing for a living? I'm like, I'm a C and C++ developer. And everybody in the room, really, are you a C++ developer? How cool is that? So that's a big, big difference, you know, like this is cool stuff, and it's old stuff. That's the reason why an old man was asked to present this session, I guess. But what I have here is an application, and that application has a math library, and of course this is very simple stuff, because I like to keep my demos very simple. But what I'm doing is determine if a number is a prime number or not, And then I have another function, and that function returns a list of prime numbers. And I wrote a little MFC application around it. And if I just execute that application, you see it's taking some time because, hey, we were a 16-bit operating system. But then here you have, you know, like between 0 and 50, I have these prime numbers. And in order to get this working on Windows Phone, I already, 20 years ago, had to architect this application very well. So my presentation was separated from my business logic. Now, I don't know how many people are doing that, but that's a good thing, actually. And that's one of the things. It is essential for, you know, like making use of C++ code inside a Windows Phone application, for instance. It's also, you know, like we are running with some restrictions later on, so I cannot, you know, like do anything that I would be able to do inside this MS-DOS-based operating system. But if you think about it, if I would be able during the course of the remaining 65 minutes or so to get this particular application running on Windows Phone 8 with some added value to it, then that would be pretty amazing. So we can reuse very old software later. And you know, like, this is really applicable, for instance, for financial packages or something in the enterprise. It could also be for, you know, like image processing. Those algorithms that, you know, like stay untouched for 20 years or something, everybody already left the company and that software is still working, so everybody's like, please don't touch that software. But we still want to bring it to another device because everybody wants to have their own device. I mean, if you listen to Rob Tiffany's talks during TechEd here, it seems that this bring your own device is a big thing. And that's, of course, kind of true. And I was walking here through the conference center and I'm like thinking, like, well, bring your own device. It's not that hard to realize that because everybody that I see here has a Windows phone. Everybody has a Surface. The office environment where we're all working probably runs Windows Server. So we have a complete secure environment and everybody, you know, like all our IT pros are probably happy because the bring your own device thing is not that difficult. But then I stepped outside the conference center because for starters, I got cold. So I needed to warm up a little bit. And to my amazement, if you take one step outside this conference center, not everybody is using a Windows phone, and not everybody is using a Surface. They are using other devices. So reality is that using, you know, like other devices also means that if we want to target our applications to run on devices, that we also need to go to those other devices probably. So that's another important thing. To finish this demo, if you, you know, like kind of got tired of Windows in the old days, you could just get rid of it. So first I'm terminating my application, then I'm terminating Visual C++. Then if I'm tired of Windows, I could terminate Windows and it's not the end of everything. Because then you still have that good old DOS in which you could still party on. That's different as well. So let's go to modern days right now and let's kind of start my presentation. My name is Maarten Struis. Sorry for my funny accent. I'm from the Netherlands, actually. If you want to get in touch, if you want to talk further about either, you know, like developing C++, development for Windows Phone, etc., etc., there's my Twitter handle as well. And let's just take a look at what we're going to do today. So my introduction was basically a demo of some old code, and we're going to try and use that code on Windows Phone. But we're also going to ask that question, like, why do we want to use C or C++ inside a Windows Phone device? And we're going to talk about how we can achieve that, how we can use that little piece of code that I just wrote, that I just took from, you know, like 20 years ago. How can we run that on Windows Phone? And what are the restrictions of doing that? And how can we make that legacy code react a little bit cooler than it did when it, you know, like was running on a 20 years old operating system? Those are typically the questions, but then you have other things as well. Because if I'm integrating my software in a new environment on a new platform, probably I might still, you know, like run into some issues or something. So I might want to debug. How are you going to debug native code in combination with managed code? Is that at all possible using Visual Studio? So I'm going to spend some time on that too. If there's time left over, then we do a Q&A session. From experience, there's probably no time left over, but probably we're going to run dramatically out of time. If that's the case, then in the afternoon, I will be at the booth where we can definitely talk further. This slide for everybody who has been to Windows Phone sessions, should be familiar by now. And I'm amazed that every speaker can say something relevant to this slide. And I was thinking about it yesterday, and I'm like, C, C++, and here we're talking about Office, we're talking about the right choice for business. And then I thought, like, oh, yeah, but wait a moment. Legacy code, code that is running in the company for a long, long time that you want to bring to modern devices, there's my connection. So indeed, the fact that Windows Phone has the capability of executing native code in Windows Phone 8 is very, very relevant. And if you think about developing for Windows Phone, then you have many, many different options. You can, you know, like develop a managed application using XAML for your UI and C# or Visual Basic .NET for your programming logic. Of course, you can make use of a modern architecture or design pattern like MVVM. You can take the approach, if you're a game developer, to, you know, like develop using the XNA framework in combination with C# or Visual Basic .NET, and that's important for backward compatibility. If you're targeting Windows Phone 7.1 or Windows Phone 8 devices, then this is still the way you want to go, maybe. But if you're only developing for Windows Phone 8, and if you're a game developer, then probably I would encourage you to take a look at Direct3D, either in combination with XAML or native code only. Both options are available. It's kind of cool that as a game developer that you have the possibility to create some of your user interface in XAML as well, because in Direct3D, as it was in the XNA framework, it's kind of hard to create simple UI elements like buttons and text boxes and something like that. And you can mix and match those things together. Now, for this presentation, we're not going to talk about gaming, so we're definitely not going to talk about the XNA framework. I'm also not going to cover Direct3D, but we're going to focus on developing a managed application written in C# and reusing legacy code that was written in C or C++. And if you're using C++, if you're like me, you know, like I developed in C++ for a long, long time, until, let's say, around 2000. At that time, the .NET framework was the latest new thing. An environment with a common language runtime, with just-in-time compilation, with code that compiled to an intermediate language, and only at the last stage, during just-in-time compilation, that code was brought down to the bare metal. And the promise of that common language runtime in combination with the .NET framework was platform independence. And to a certain extent, it kept that promise. So if today you're, you know, like maybe using Windows CE as an embedded operating system, it still has support for that compact framework, independent of the processor you're running on. So it could be an ARM processor, it could be an x86 processor, et cetera, et cetera. And from a coding point of view, C# and Visual Basic .NET were truly object-oriented languages, languages where you could, you know, like, do a little less than with C++, because in my opinion, if you're using C++, you have all the power in the world at your fingertips. With C#, that's a little bit different. For instance, if you're, you know, like allocating some memory, then if that memory is no longer in use, we had a garbage collector that collected all that unused memory and gave it back to the operating system. With C++, that was a completely different story. So you could leak memory in C++. But when I started looking again a year ago or something to C++ as a programming language, to my surprise, it's a completely different world today. So all my old C++ code is still working, but many, many features that are available in C# are now also available in C++. The real cool part of Windows Phone being a platform that makes use of the same kernel as Windows 8, so Windows 8 devices, tablets for instance, is that we're also using the same compilers as the big Windows is doing, which is really cool because we can make use of the latest features of the C++ compiler. Visual Studio 2012 has features of C++ 11, which is an ANSI standard or becoming an ANSI standard, and all those features are supported in Windows Phone 8. But last but not least, if you still have old legacy code and you're convinced that that legacy code is safe to execute, you can still do that. So that's what we're going to, you know, like find out in the remainder of this talk. So let's first take a look at some different project types, how they appear for Windows Phone inside a inside Visual Studio. So I'm going to go back here to my demo machine. I'm going to close down this DOS box here, because we kind of don't need it anymore. And if I take Visual Studio, and I'm just using Visual Studio Express here for Windows Phone, if I start a new project, you have these many, many choices. If I take a C-sharp project, you see like about 10 or 15 different templates. Part of those are because we want to be compatible with Windows Phone 7.1 as well, so you can target both platforms. You have the choice of Visual Basic as well, and there is this new thing, Visual C++, which is new in for Windows Phone 8. And here we have a number of different possibilities, so I can create a direct 3D application with XAML support or native only. I can do unit testing as long as I installed update 2 for Visual Studio. So this is brand new, actually. That's a week or two old or something. But unit testing is fully supported, not only in C# or Visual Basic, but also for C++ projects. I can create runtime components, which basically are extensions of the Windows Phone operating system. And I can use or create dynamic link libraries or static libraries. And now to prove that this is really native code, what I'm going to do is create a direct 3D application, just, you know, like for to show that this is native code running on the bare metal of the machine. So let me just deploy this to the emulator. Then we're going to build it. We've got a pre-compiled header that needs to be compiled. And you already can see that this is native code, because typically managed code compiles faster but runs slightly slower. Native code, it takes a little bit longer to compile, but it runs slightly faster on a machine. So this is just a default direct 3D application, your starting point. It has shaders, it has, you know, like this cube that is circling around there. But that's not that exciting. What is really exciting is if I go to my source code here and scroll all the way down, what I will see, and this is again one of those trips to back to memory lane, is that, hey, I have a main entry point, and here I see something fancy, an array of platform dot dot string head as a parameter. Basically, this is a modern variety of argc and argv as command line parameters. So it's basically the same. That main entry point will execute. If I take a look at my project properties, what you will see is tons of options to control the C# compiler. I can set optimization. If I want to debug, I don't want to have optimization enabled, for instance, because it's going to be very hard to do source code debugging then, because we're jumping back and forth all over the place. If I take a look at the linker, I can specify which kinds of libraries, for instance, I need to add in order to compile and link my application to make it into an executable. Speaking of an executable, if I take a look at my manifest file and just show code here, what you will see is that my entry point is not some sort of a DLL that was hosted in a ZAP, but it's an executable. It's an .exe file, a file running on the bare metal inside my device. And last but not least, and that's the biggest proof I can give you that this is real, true, pure native code, is if I'm stopping debugging, what you will see is if I'm targeting the emulator, then I'm targeting a Win32 device. What that means is the emulator is a virtual machine. The virtual machine is hosted in Hyper-V. Hyper-V is running on an x86 or x64 processor, so I'm actually running code compiled for x84. Now, if I change to a device, what you then will see is that, hey, the compiler is going to generate different code, because now it's going to generate code for an ARM processor. In a managed application, we didn't have to do that because of the fact that we just compiled to intermediate language, and on the device itself, the just-in-time compiler was capable of compiling that code. For Windows Phone 8, it's even a little bit different. So if you submit your application and your application gets downloaded from the store, what we will do is cloud compiling, which is sort of a just-in-time compilation towards ARM code, but then already done before your application hits the device, just for performance reasons. But if you're developing a C++ application, we need to know the target for your application. Okay, let's go back to the slide deck. To that, I guess. And talking about C++ and C code, it differs completely compared to 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So in 2013, C++ to me was a revelation. It's like a brand new language. And this is not a crash course in C++, but I'm hoping, you know, like maybe at a future event or possibility, that we can dig in a little bit deeper into C++, because it's a really cool language, and it has fantastic capabilities. A few highlights that make my life easier. Just like C#, we have something to reference variables. So what you have in C#, for instance, is you can use the var keyword, and the compiler figures out what strongly type belongs to that parameter that you just declared. In C++, you can do the same with the auto keyword. In C++, in a modern version of C++, we have lambdas, or anonymous functions, or anonymous methods, just like C# has that. Which also means that you could implement link functionality in this version of C++. Enumerations are strongly typed. In C++, in the past, that used to be, you know, like an enum was an equivalent of an unsigned integer, and you just gave numbers. Now I can give enums values like strings and stuff like that. So they are strongly typed. Very, very cool, because it just makes the chance of getting errors inside my program logic way smaller. And really the coolest part about modern C++ is this thing called a smart pointer. Because one of the biggest issues that we have with C++, and when I'm going to analyze my code that I showed you earlier, you will see a potential problem inside that code. One of the biggest issues we always have is like, hey, if you are allocating memory, you're forgetting to free up that memory. And making use of smart pointers, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Because a smart pointer is nothing more than a template class. And actually, that template class has a destructor. So if I'm allocating some memory, then I'm just, you know, like doing a new operator. And when the memory that I had in use, if that variable goes out of scope, so then what's happening is the destructor is actually being executed, and we can delete that allocated memory there without any worries. So that's really, really cool stuff. We need that also, that functionality, to actually interface to the Windows and Windows Phone 8 operating system. Because Windows Phone runtime components, as well as Windows runtime components, communicate to each other and to the underlying operating system using a technology being COM, the component object model, which is a binary standard to let objects communicate with each other. And in order to achieve that, you need to know if an object, a binary object, is in use, and for that we maintain reference counts. And one of the most frequently made errors was not decreasing the reference count, and in that way we were leaking objects. With smart pointers, that's not necessary anymore, because automatically that's going to happen for you whenever any value goes out of scope. So that's really, really cool stuff. And again, I wish that I was, you know, like able to speak a little bit more about it and do an in-depth C++ session, but then it would not be a Windows Phone session, I guess. So I promise you that we would answer a number of questions like why. At the booth, I got a number of questions like why, but then the questions are more like functionality. Why does Windows Phone not this, or why does Windows Phone not that? And those are, of course, relevant questions for everybody. But I like to keep it positive today. So now we're going to ask, why would you want to run C++ on Windows Phone? Because I have an easier answer for that. And the answer kind of depends on who you're talking to. But when I started developing C++, and when I heard about C++ being, you know, like brought back to Windows Phone, I was really excited for one reason. I thought, like, hey, performance. It's going to be interesting, because now I'm going to run on the bare metal, so I'm going to be so fast on a Windows Phone device. That must be the most important reason why I'm going to use C++ on Windows Phone. Until I spoke to somebody, said, like, well, performance, that's all kind of nice and cool, but if you think about it, it's not the most important thing, because these Windows Phone 8 devices, they are pretty fast. And thanks to the fact that we are running, you know, like a subset of the Windows 8 operating system, .NET code is executed pretty fast, because there's a very thin layer, if you're using a .NET API, to go down to a Windows runtime component. So speed of execution cannot be the main reason why you want to get to C++. But there's another reason. And even though, you know, like, I wish I could say different, but hey, I know this is going to be shocking for everybody, but there are other phone devices out there in the wild. It's not just Windows Phone. There are more devices out there. And as a company, as an enterprise, if you invest in developing software, and if, you know, like, the whole story of people, workers bringing their own device to the office and using their device, then we need a possibility, a means to execute code on multiple devices, completely different platforms using completely different operating systems. That is the biggest reason why you might want to consider looking at C++. Because C++ is supported on Apple devices, on iPhones. It's supported on Android devices. It's supported on Windows phones. So we have now this common base of functionality that we can use on all those types of devices. So portability is the most important reason why you should look at C and C++. Reusing code, that's another example. If you have legacy code in your company, then it just makes sense. If you have the possibility to execute that same code on a Windows phone, why not just reuse it? It just saves money and time. And it's not applicable in each and every scenario, I'm pretty sure about, but it's definitely applicable for those complex math functions, financial calculations, image processing functionality. Those are the areas where you want to look at. And then last but not least, yes, we're running a slightly faster by making use of C and C++. And what I'm going to show today are some very simple examples using a small, simple library. And the reason for that is just to make sure that we understand how we can use C++. But in real life, on Windows Phone, there are some real pretty big, serious libraries available that you can use. If you're into gaming, Unity is a cross-platform gaming engine, and it's written in C++. So Windows Phone 7, we could not use that, but in Windows Phone 8, since we have native support, we can make use of Unity, and it's fully supported. And actually, Unity is kind of a cool thing. So it has this possibility, this designer, to design all kinds of gaming surfaces and all kinds of scenarios. And then, in a sort of a code-behind way, you can use C# or JavaScript to get functionality to that game. Pretty cool stuff. Another reason why you want to have native support, even if you're not developing C++ code yourself, but is for databases. SQLite is a database that's used cross-platform on many, many different devices. Thanks to the fact that we have native support, we can use SQLite. And we can use SQLite in the same way as you can use on Windows 8 on a tablet, for instance. So there you have 100% code compatibility, actually. So that's really, really cool as well. And again, that's a legacy reason as well, probably. So later in one of my demos, what I did was I took one of my SQLite databases. I'm, you know, like a music fanatic, even though it wasn't working this morning. But so I have a database in SQLite containing all my music and stuff. And it's running on a desktop. So I just took that database, brought it to the phone, and took a look how hard it would be to actually make use of that on a Windows phone as well. And we're going to see later during this talk how that is working. Now, there are a few restrictions. So you can use C and C++, but you cannot use existing C++ libraries directly inside a solution. So I can add a C++ library, and that could be a static library or a DLL. I can add it to a solution, but I cannot immediately directly use it. Instead, what I need to do is use that C++ functionality indirectly. And what that means is that I'm going to create yet another component, being a Windows Phone runtime component. And that Windows Phone runtime component, that's going to be the responsible piece of functionality that will communicate to my library, either statically or dynamic link library. So basically what it is sort of a Marshall layer. And again, if you go back to memory lane, and if you think if you were a managed developer or something, we had something similar there, because as a managed application developer, if you needed some functionality that was not available, not expressed through the .NET framework or the .NET Compact framework, you could p-invoke back to Win32 code. To keep it easy, look at this layer, this Windows Phone runtime, as sort of a layer where I'm kind of p-invoking, but I'm doing it different. It's sort of a p-invoke on steroids, and I'm going to show how that is going to actually look like on a device. So let's just spend some time doing a real project, a Windows Phone project, and let me try and bring that math library to Windows Phone right now. So in order to do that, what I'm going to do is just close this down here. And I already started another instance of Visual Studio. And what I have is a little application. And that application has, of course, a user interface defined in XAML. And what it does is nothing spectacular, but I can specify a range, and it can calculate, or it can return prime numbers to me. And I have another button being isResponsive. Now, if I just deploy this, just to see how it looks on a device, then the most important button here is actually this isResponsive. Each time I'm clicking that, through data binding, I'm incrementing a counter, and I'm showing that counter inside a text box. And here I want to make use of that functionality in that library that I'm having. So I already added my math library. It's this thing here. Let's take a look real quick at the functionality. My functionality, the method I want to make use of, is this prime numbers function. It's returning a pointer to an integer, and it accepts two parameters, start and stop. And what I'm doing is, in order to return a list of integers, I'm allocating an array of integers. I'm doing that dynamically. And then I'm just going to, you know, like do some magic here, and I'm going to, in the end, return that array of integers. And in, you know, like modern ages, all alarm bells should ring off right now, because what I'm forgetting here is freeing up that memory, which is pretty bad. But hey, this is 20-year-old code. At that time, I didn't know what I know now today, so this was acceptable. Even my boss liked it, because we didn't do code reviews at that time anyway. So, and it compiled, so it was good enough, right? That was 20 years ago. But today, that's a little bit different. But anyway, this is the functionality I want to use. I have it already in this library here. So typically, what you would do in a C-sharp application, I would add a reference. And if I'm adding a reference, let me stop the debugger here. If I'm adding a reference, and I want to have a reference, you know, like inside my solution, and sure, here's my math library. So I'm going to add that. What you see now is like, hey, Visual Studio doesn't like that. It doesn't allow me to add that library. And there's a reason for that. Because one of the things that is still important, what I said so far is like, hey, you know, like you can party because C++ can do anything and can reach anything on the device, and, you know, like you can use legacy code, et cetera, et cetera. Which is all true, but we still want to have a defined way in which you're using C++. So never under any circumstance should my library bring the phone in some sort of danger of crashing or something. So we allow to use C++, but we also want to control it a little bit. So you're still going to run sort of in a sandbox. You're still not having the possibility of exchanging data with other applications, for instance. We don't allow that. And that's very important because, after all, a Windows phone, and in my opinion, any phone, should be a device with which you can make phone calls. And sometimes it's essential, actually, to make phone calls with a device. And we tend to, we kind of, you know, like seem to forget that more and more, because we want to have, you know, like we want to run applications on mobile devices. This morning in USA Today, I was reading that 2 years from now, the usage of mobile internet, so data, you know, like on a mobile device to access the internet, is going to be way bigger than from a landline kind of usage in an office or something. So this is exploding, but we forget that Windows phones also need to make phone calls. By making sure that our applications behave, we guarantee that that phone call can be made. In the past, we had Windows Mobile, and it was very easy, and I demonstrated that frequently, to write a little application, increase its priority, have a little endless while loop in it, and boom, all of a sudden, you couldn't make phone calls anymore. I'm not going to mention other platforms, but there are platforms today in which I have that same capability. And they're not iPhones, by the way. Windows Phone doesn't allow that. And that's important. So one of the reasons why we can prevent that is by accessing C and C++ code. It's totally okay, but we want to do it in a controlled manner. For that, I need an additional layer. That layer is going to be a Windows Phone runtime component. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a Windows Phone runtime component here. And that's just another project. So I'm going to add a new project. I am working in Visual C++, but I'm selecting a Windows Phone runtime component. The name is totally fine with me. And what I'm going to do in this Windows Phone runtime component is I'm going to add a method. So I have a header file, I have an implementation here, I want to add a method. I also want to make sure that I'm going to use or import a namespace here. So those are things that, you know, like, I just need to do. I'm going to import the namespace platform. Hello. If I could type, I would do that. And what this gives me is functionality that is defined, for instance, objects and inside objects methods that are defined in the Windows Phone runtime API. So I can have access to that. And I want to create a method. And that method, I don't want to return an array of integers because I just want to show those prime numbers in a text box. So I'm going to return a string instead, which is, you know, like a completely different type of object, of course. And I'm indicating that the string I'm going to return is a string that is defined in the Windows runtime. That's the little hat that is beneath that keyword string. And my method is going to be get prime numbers. I have some start value and some end value. So this is, you know, like the declaration of my new method. I'm just going to copy that. Now I'm going to go to my implementation here. I'm going to create a new method. Add this to it. See, it's C++, so I need to type a little bit more and a little less code is generated for me. But that's totally okay. I like my keyboard. And this is basically my implementation. Now, in order to make use of my legacy code, what I also need to do is add a header file. Because my C library exposes its functionality through a header file. So I'm going to include that header file here. That header file is located, let's see here, mathlib.h. So I have full IntelliSense. And this is not the best practice in coding, again, because of the fact that I'm using these paths here. But, you know, like, that's just for simplicity. What I now can do is create a native result. And that is going to call a function prime numbers. I now have full IntelliSense because of the fact that I added that header file. I'm going to pass my start and my end value. And I'm going to also create another auto variable called result. I'm going to new up a Windows Phone runtime object being a string. Ref new string. That will be better, I hope. Okay. Then I'm going to do some magic to make sure that I convert that integer pointer, so the list of integers, into a string. And in the end, what I'm going to do here is make sure that I'm going to delete my native result. I need to do that because I showed you that my original function had a potential memory leak. It's not surrounded by a smart pointer, so I'm doing it manually. But this additional layer gives me the chance to add some functionality to make sure that my legacy code is functioning better. And then in the end, I'm just going to return my result. Now, in order to speed up a little bit, I have one snippet, and since this is C++, my snippet somehow did not work, so I defined it in good old Notepad. I'm just going to put it in here. And of course, this is not complex. It was just a matter of, you know, like wanting to make sure that I'm fast enough. What I'm doing is I'm just converting each and every individual integer that this prime numbers function returns, and I'm converting that and adding it to a string. Again, not the most efficient way, because I'm using a string concat, which means that I'm creating a number of temporary objects. This could have been better, but I just want to keep my demo simple. What I now can do is go to my prime numbers. I'm going to add a reference to something in my solution, and that's my phone, Windows Phone runtime component. So I just added that reference. Now, since this is C++, I better compile to bring me IntelliSense into my managed application as well. And what you see immediately is that that recompiling was a good thing, because I get linker errors. And now it gets scary, because as a managed application developer, linker errors are something that we typically don't get. In native code, you do get that. So I added an header file, but I never added the library in which that method, prime numbers, is defined. So I need to go back to my Windows Phone runtime component. I need to go to its projects properties. I need to go to my linker. I need to go to my input here. And I need to add an additional dependency. And that additional dependency, I hope it's here, is living here under a debug folder. It's called mathlib. And the library itself is called mathlib as well. By adding this, let's see if it compiles right now. Ah, cool. That's so much better. And what I can do now is inside my managed application, since I added a reference to that object, I can go to my my find primes button click event handler. I can take a Windows Phone runtime component 1 namespace in that we have a Windows Phone runtime component. I'm going to declare a variable of that type, being WPRC, for instance. I'm going to new it up to create an instance of it. And finally, what I can do is I have a result text box. Its text property. Hello, that was C++. Oops. See, it's kind of confusing if you're doing managed and native together, but oh well. Its text property, I can assign that to my WPRC, its get prime numbers method. And I need a start and an end value. Well, I have those as well. Convert to integer 32 from my TB begin value, its text property. And do something similar for my end value. Okay. And I should hopefully be good to go. So let's see. I'm going to execute this code on the emulator. We have no errors. That's good news. And I am responsive. And now I'm going to do this. And what you will see immediately is like, hey, that button stays red. That's pretty nasty stuff. Until I got my prime numbers back. If I do that again, and if I try to click is responsive, which I'm doing continuously, then I did not get the best experience inside my application. So I'm using legacy code. 20 years ago, I didn't know about the fact that Windows Phone devices need to be fast and fluid. My boss never told me that. He said, like, you need to have support for Windows Phone, but not that it should be fast and fluid. So I still have an issue here. That issue, thanks to the fact that I'm using a Windows Phone runtime component surrounding my native C library, I can even solve that issue. And to make sure that you're not leaving the room, I'm not going to do that right now, but we wait a little bit with that until later. Because there's another thing I want to show. So this functionality, I mean, from a functionality point of view, this is working. I also fixed that potential issue that I'm returning memory to the operating system. There's a couple of things that I want to show you in this particular application still. So I'm going to go to my Windows runtime component here, the one that I just created. I'm going to put a breakpoint there. Because that's the other thing I told you in the introduction, like, hey, you can debug code as well. So let's go ahead and let's do this again. I'm going to stop my application. I have a nice breakpoint there. I'm going to run in the emulator again. I'm going to do prime numbers. And what you immediately notice already is that my breakpoint seemingly is disabled. So if I'm executing prime numbers, there they are, but I did not stop in my Windows Phone runtime component in that functionality I had. Now, in order to do that, I need to make a choice. And that choice is an interesting choice. And if you're doing a debug exercise, that's an important choice as well. So if I go to my project properties, what you will see is that if I go to my debug tab here, I can choose for my debugger between a managed or a native debugger. You cannot intermix those two. Those are completely different worlds. And typically what I'm doing if I'm debugging, you know, like a piece of legacy code, I start with the managed debugger. I'm going to go quickly through my C# code, and at some point, you know, like probably something is going to break, I first want to pinpoint that location. If I have that location available, then I'm going to change debuggers. I'm going to go to the native-only debugger, and I'm just going to execute my application again, setting a breakpoint, of course, at a piece of suspect code. So now if I hit this prime numbers, what you will see is like, hey, I stopped inside my Windows runtime component. I also know that this is my legacy code over here. You even see, you know, like an offset where in memory that function does exist. And now I can just jump into that old piece of C code that is 20 years old, and using Visual Studio 2012, I can even debug this stuff. I can see that, hey, I allocated a pointer, and hey, I'm going to, you know, like calculate prime numbers. So this is the way in which you mix debugging between managed code and native code. You have to make a choice. Typically, I start managed, pinpoint where my problem is, because my problem most of the times is in native code, to be honest, and then change to the native debugger and fix my issues. Another thing that I told you, and I am apologizing deeply for the fact that I'm not showing you many, many PowerPoints, but I think it's cooler to, you know, like show some code and how that code is working. Hopefully you're not going to punish me with the evaluations later, but if so, then that be it. But I want to show another project, actually. So I'm going to stop this one right now. And let's go ahead and take a look at some database work. Because, hey, we are, you know, like at TechEd, I can imagine that you're working for enterprise organizations. I can also imagine that, you know, like you're doing a lot with data. And especially on a mobile device, it's often important to have at least, you know, like a subset of your data available on your device as well. Because what if you don't have a network connection for whatever reason? It's unacceptable that you cannot continue working. So then you have a local copy. You can work with that local copy and sync it later, you know, like back to the back office again. So in order to do that, we have a possibility to make use of SQLite. And what I want to do is just open another solution here. And this solution, again, it looks very simple as far as the user interface is concerned. I have a little user interface, and in that user interface, I have a list of albums that I want to assemble, and those albums should come from a database. So the first thing I'm going to do in my solution is I'm going to add a local database. So I'm going to add an existing item. And that existing item happens to be defined here. It's a MediaMonkey database. MediaMonkey is a desktop application, especially used to, you know, like sort of maintain a database of records, CDs, that kind of stuff, music basically. And it also contains a media player and stuff like that. And MediaMonkey, that application, that Win32 application, generated this database and maintained this database. The database itself is, you know, like it's 70 megabytes in size. And it's kind of, you know, like it's kind of large already for a device, but I don't care that much about performance. I'm just going to add that to my solution. What this means is that what I want to do is make sure that this database is going to be deployed as content to my device. And if I have a newer copy, I want to have that copy on my device as well. What this means is, for demonstration purposes, this is totally fine, because that database will be installed in a folder where my application will be installed as well. And if I'm, you know, like a developer, if I have a developer unlocked device, or if I'm running on the emulator, I can access the database and I have read and write access. However, on a real device from an end user, you only would have read access. So this is great for lookup tables and things like that, but it's not that great for other things. So I got a Windows Embedded Developer update. I needed to see what was going on there. But because then you might want to, you know, like make sure that you copy that database to isolated storage. But if it's just a lookup table, you're going to be fine. So I just have my database right now. And the other thing I need now, because I want to use SQLite, is I need SQLite functionality. And if you go to Tools, to Extensions, what you can look for online, for instance, is for SQLite for Windows Phone. This is an extension library. You can install it through Visual Studio. And it contains the SQLite database written in native code. So I already installed it. And what I can do inside my application right now is just add a reference. And I'm going to add a Windows Phone extension. And that extension is going to be SQLite for Windows Phone. I'm just going to click OK. And what I now have is a native component implementing functionality for the SQLite database. But as we knew before, you know, like from my simple first demo, it's like, hey, native cannot directly be accessed from a managed application. So I still need another separate layer in order to make use of this functionality. And just in time, it happens to be that Peter Thor, and I think in cooperation with Andy Wickley, created a layer, a Windows Phone runtime component that has very thin functionality to access SQLite as a database. And this afternoon, I think it's this afternoon, Andy Wickley has an in-depth talk about SQLite and about how to use that on Windows Phone device. So I strongly recommend to go to that session because I'm just touching the surface here. What is cool is that functionality, that Windows Phone runtime component, they published that as source code. And they have a version for Windows, and they have a version for Windows Phone. It's available on the Windows blog, and I should have written that down actually for you, but maybe if I have time enough, I look with Notepad to actually make sure that you get the right URL there. I'm just going to add that project to my solution. Yes, it's safe to do that. But because of the fact that we have source code available, you can also take a look at what they were doing there, which is pretty cool. So I can take a look, and this is just a thin layer around SQLite, but it has these weird things like it's opening things asynchronously. So they have asynchronous behavior to this C++ library. That's just what I wanted to show. I'm not going to go into details there right now. Let's see if this compiles. And, well, almost. And the reason why it's almost compiling is the fact that I added that Windows Phone runtime component, but I didn't add a reference to it. So now inside my solution, I need to add a reference to that SQLite for Windows Phone, Windows Phone runtime component. Now I should be good to go. If I'm going to run on my emulator again, what you will see is that it's taking a long time to compile. The reason why it's taking a long time to compile right now is that I have a 70 meg database incorporated as part of my zap file. So it's going to take that into that large zap. It's going to try and shrink that database using some zip algorithm, and only then we go to the device. On the device, in the load event handler, I am actually showing some data, but my list is way longer. So in the background, I'm continuing loading more data, and I'm using a long list selector to actually display that data. So here's this long list selector in action. I just had, you know, like just a standard sample, making sure that my headers look good, making sure that all kind of that stuff is available. Now, if I wait a little longer, and that's also then you see like, hey, databases on a device are really cool because, you know, like for continuing working, but if you have a real large database, it's just going to take some time loading, and I should have been smarter with that. But now it's finally completely loaded, and what I now have is like 60,000 different entries that I can scroll through on a Windows Phone device, which is still pretty impressive, I think, in that amount of time. So I took a database from a desktop existing Win32 application, brought it to Windows Phone. Thanks to the fact that the database was a SQLite database, I can now use it over this device, but I could also use it on an Android device, on an iPhone, on a Surface. On all these devices, this functionality will be available. So that's another reason, you know, like why cross-platform in combination with native code is just very, very important. Now, what you saw right now is this whole mix of different APIs. So we have native functionality. I cannot call that immediately from managed code, but I have to create a layer in between. That layer in between is a Windows Phone runtime component. And that Windows Phone runtime component has functionality that is available in the Windows Phone operating system. On the other hand, we have .NET APIs that are also, you know, like giving access to functionality inside the operating system. So one of the questions that I frequently get is, which API should I use as a Windows Phone developer? And that story is kind of, you know, like it seems kind of nasty, but in my opinion, it's not entirely nasty. But if you are a managed developer, if your background is, hey, I was a developer for the last 10 years or so, I know about the .NET framework, maybe I did some Windows Phone 7 development using Silverlight or something, then you still can use the .NET API for Windows Phone 8 development as well. You feel comfortable with that, don't worry about Windows Phone runtimes. If, on the other hand, you're coming from a C++ background, and now all of a sudden you need to develop for Windows Phone, then if you are going to use legacy code, you still need to create that additional Windows Phone runtime component. And that Windows Phone runtime component, in order to communicate to your C++ functionality, needs to make use of the Windows Phone runtime APIs. So there you need to learn a new API. It seems messy, but it's not. .NET developers use the .NET managed APIs. C++ developers make use of the Windows Phone runtime APIs. So what you should do is just use the API that you're comfortable with, unless you need to develop one of those Windows Phone runtime components. There you need to make use of the WinPRT API because of the fact that you're actually extending the operating system. So you're adding functionality to the operating system, which is pretty cool, actually. Well, this is, again, a summary of what I was just saying. I mean, that's not that relevant because I have another demo that I definitely need to show to you, which is more important. Also, if you want to invest in a new API, that's one significant line. If you never have to worry about backward compatibility from Windows Phone 8 to Windows Phone 7.1, it's up to you to think about maybe learning the Windows runtime API, because that's something that's going to benefit you a lot also if you want to develop for Windows 8 as well, because that is going to be the API, you know, that we're going to extend in the future. That's also the API that exposes all this asynchronous functionality, each and every potential method that runs, you know, like potentially longer than 50 milliseconds has to have an asynchronous version. The sooner you are feeling comfortable with that functionality and that API, in my opinion, the better, because that is really the road ahead. But yes, you can still use your managed APIs. The difference, basically, is in the way we expose functionality. So what you see, a .NET API or a namespaces for a .NET API and an equivalent for the Windows Phone runtime API. And what you see is typically everything that starts with system is a .NET API. Everything that starts with Windows is a Windows Phone runtime API. And the .NET API, thanks to something called language projection, calls into the Windows Phone runtime API. So we just add a little layer of abstraction in order to use still that Windows Phone runtime API on your behalf. Now, if you're developing C and C++ code today, so I'm not talking just about legacy code that I was developing, but if you are developing C++ code today that you want to have running cross-platform or something, what you want to do is have one central layer where you kind of marshal between data types. That layer should live in your Windows Phone runtime component. Because the Windows Phone runtime component has knowledge, since it's written in C++, but it is a part of the Windows Phone runtime. It has knowledge of this Windows Phone runtime APIs and its data types, so it does know what a string is, string head that I showed in an example. But it also has knowledge about integer pointers and stuff like that, native C functionality and native C data types. So that layer should be the translation layer from pure native to something managed that it's callable from inside a user interface. If you are converting too many parameters too often, then you will hit some performance hits. So what I like to do is, you know, like my native function, my prime numbers function, has an integer pointer that it returns only on one location, on one centralized location inside my Windows Phone runtime API. I want to convert that to a string and then continue working with that string. I'm not going to do that back and forth all over the place. One central location where I'm changing from native types, from a native world, to a Windows Phone and Windows 8 world, because those data types are sometimes incompatible. Another thing you might consider is making your Windows Phone runtime functions, the methods you define there, to make them asynchronous, because we still have that issue inside my legacy library, and that issue is that even though my functionality is executing properly, for an end user, it was a bad experience because for at least 4 or 5 seconds, they could not use that phone for something else. And that's unacceptable. I'm not even sure if my application, if I would submit it for certification, if it would be validated like that. But I'm honestly not sure about that. But I don't want to give my applications out like that. What we already saw is that the debugging experience for native and managed code is similar, but you have to make sure that you change the debugger type. We cannot use both managed and native debuggers side by side. So that's something to keep in mind as well. That was just for reference. But what I want to do is add asynchronous behavior to my legacy code. So I'm going to go back to my demo machine. We're going to terminate this database that was still active here. I'm going to close down this solution. And we're going to go back to those prime numbers. So what I'm having right now is, well, definitely a synchronous version to calculate prime numbers. This thing is just continuously executing until it's done. The reason why it's slow, well, I had to artificially think of something, so I built in a delay in the way that we used to do that back in the old days, using clock ticks and having a constant definition that gives me clocks per second. To my surprise, this was still working on Windows Phone, actually, so that's kind of cool. And I have a Windows Phone runtime component. So what I want to do right now is inside my Windows Phone runtime component, I'm going to go to my header file, and I want to have an asynchronous version of this get prime numbers thing. So I'm just going to copy this. And I want to have an asynchronous version. Well, an asynchronous version is typically, if you just take, you know, like the naming conventions in consideration, you just add async there. And I need to return something different than a string type. It needs to be something different from that. In order to do that, I'm going to add another namespace. Which is the Windows Foundation, which contains functionality, low-level functionality for the Windows operating system, including asynchronous behavior. And what I now want to do is I'm going to return something else because I want to execute some sort of an asynchronous operation. So I'm making use of an interface, and I'm returning something of type interface async operation. And that interface is defined inside the Windows Phone runtime component, which I indicate by giving it another head. So this is the method. And yes, it's C++. It looks kind of scary, but this is something you get used to that pretty, pretty fast. They are just templates. If you get used to working in templates, then you're cool. The other thing I want to do is make sure that nobody from my team of Windows Phone developers is going to call accidentally into my synchronous function. How I can do that is very simple. I'm going to move it to private. But I still want to reuse that functionality myself. So now I need to come up with an implementation for this stuff. I should have copied a little bit more, I guess. Just copy this stuff here. Because this is the method I want to implement. And implementing that method means, again, a little bit of copying. There we go. Add the name of the class I'm creating, because it is C++ after all. And here we go. Life is beautiful, because I can copy. Okay. Now, what I want to do is sort of create a thread in a modern type of way, and I want to execute this code inside that thread, and only when my prime numbers are available, I want to return the end result to the caller of that function. And in order to do that, I can make use of some functionality of the platform parallel library. And to do that, I'm going to add a header file being PPL tasks. This is a header file containing functionality to create tasks, or in my terminology, almost things like worker threads or something. And ultimately, what I want to do here is something like this. Return get prime numbers. I'm going to pass in that start and end. This is what my goal needs to be. But in order to achieve that, I want to do this, I want to execute this on a separate thread. And in order to do that, what I can do is make use of functionality in the platform parallel library. And that functionality is create something async. So I'm going to create something that executes asynchronously. And the only thing what that means, executing asynchronously, is that I'm running on another thread. And that in the meantime, my user interface thread, if we look at, you know, like my Windows Phone application, can still continue to work. And it needs a function. Looking at IntelliSense there. So basically, what I want to do is returning something that needs a function. And somewhere inside, I need to still, you know, like kind of call that get prime numbers. And what I can do in C++, in modern C++, is make use of anonymous functions or lambda expressions. The only thing is they are a little bit wacky in their syntax, unless you know weird characters on your keyboard. So you need an order in which you're using things like square brackets, parentheses, and curly braces. Like in this order. This is kind of the syntax for a lambda expression or an anonymous function in C++. The first one, being the square brackets, what I specify there is if the variables that I'm going to use, am I going to use them by reference or by value? C-sharp compiler, if you know how to, you know, like create lambdas in C-sharp, the C-sharp compiler knows if you want to use something in by value or by reference. C++ compiler doesn't. And I want to use my start and end integer parameters. I definitely don't want to use them by reference, because then I would get a pointer to them, but I want to use them by value, meaning they're going to be passed on the stack to my anonymous method. And I specified it by that equal sign. The parentheses are used to pass additional parameters that live inside the scope of the body of my function. And the body of my function is available in those curly braces here. Now, the body of my function is extremely simple in this situation, because what I want to do is I want to return that list of prime numbers. So what I just created is an anonymous method that is calling, or that is creating, a worker thread, and it's packaging the return value of a synchronous method inside an interface of type async operation. If this is compiling, and there's no reason why it shouldn't, except for the fact that it doesn't, oops, then we are good to go. And remember, a couple of minutes ago, I said, like, hey, my Windows Phone developers should never use the synchronous version of that get prime numbers. So I made that private. Well, guess what? They get an error message because this error lives inside my prime numbers method. It lives here. So get prime numbers is undefined right now. So I need to fix that. And what I have right now is the possibility to use an asynchronous function on which I can await. So what I just decorate my method name with is that, hey, it's going to have asynchronous behavior. And what I'm going to do with my text here, I'm going to await for get prime numbers async. I'm going to compile. I hear drum rolls, because this is the moment of truth, of course. I'm going to execute this method right now. Let's see, we are responsive. Let's see if we get prime numbers. Oh, shoot, I am on a breakpoint. Cool. So I'm still calling that native method there. What a mess. My demo failed. Ah, okay, so we're doing it again. I'm responsive. You know what? I'm going to start it anew because I did not refresh that screen properly, so you wouldn't see anything. So I'm going to run it again. I am responsive. I'm asking for prime numbers. I am responsive. And there they are. So now my user experience is way better. So the thing is, and that's important to understand. I mean, never, if you create asynchronous functionality, even in that old 20-year-old legacy code where we didn't even know what threads were, I'm now wrapping that up in worker threads, my code is not going to execute faster. In fact, it's going to execute a little bit slower. But at the same time, the experience for an end user is way better. So what I created is now something that keeps a responsive user interface for my end user in this device. And I came all the way from something that was defined in something called DOS in Windows. See, it takes some time to boot DOS. In this operating system here, where I had this beautiful piece of functionality that was running here, exactly the same code, but this one is not responsive. So what did I add? My user interface is responsive, and I have touch. I didn't have touch here in this world as well. So big improvements with old code. That's the whole thought about that. Reusability is pretty awesome here. So key takeaways for this presentation. All Windows Phone 8 applications can use C++. And in my opinion, all Windows Phone 8 applications, especially serious applications, especially in the enterprise, especially professional stuff, they should use C++. Because we are not the only platform in the world, and you want to go cross-platform, and C++ is the way to go for modern application development. It allows portability, it allows code reuse, as hopefully you got away, you know, like to the extreme. The key there is to understand the Windows Phone runtime and its role in getting access to native components. Key there is like, hey, if something is executing too long, don't worry about it. Make it asynchronous. If you take a look at Peter Thor's sample around the wrapper around SQLite, it's full with asynchronous functionality. Very, very cool stuff. Because it just makes sure that our user interfaces stay fast and fluent. We have a couple more breakout sessions. I definitely think you should go, you know, like, when is the SQLite? Oh, it's tomorrow, 10:15. Make sure you're going to be there. This afternoon, we have a couple of fun sessions. Rob Tiffany is going to talk more about, you know, like devices in the enterprise. We have a speechifying your Windows Phone applications with Rob Miles and UK jokes. That's an important one to be at. Actually, all those, the pretty good stuff that we still have. We have hands-on labs. If you have time to check those out, please do so. Please visit the Windows Phone booth. I ran, indeed, again, completely out of time. So if you want to discuss further about C and C++ on your Windows Phone, I will be there right after the session until 6 o'clock in the evening or something. What more do we have? We don't have Windows Phone Hatter anymore, but we are at a breakout session. And in each and every breakout session, it seems that you can win a Windows Phone. So Here's some threat resources. The only one-stop shop for people, you know, like doing serious business with Windows Phone is www.windowsphone.com/business. Make sure you go there. And Channel 9 has a lot of cool stuff. It will also have a lot of cool stuff, maybe all breakout sessions. I'm not sure, but a lot of breakout sessions of this tech ad and other things. And please, yes, please fill out your evaluation form. If you didn't like this, be honest. If you like this session and think that it's useful for you for your work later on, be honest as well, because that gives me a chance to hopefully come back next year and dig in even deeper in cool stuff for whatever version of Windows Phone we have by that time. I'm not sure about that. Thank you very much for your attention, and it's time to get that phone out of the... We can take them offline just in a second. Let's do the drawing of the phone, and then I'll just hang around here. Yes. Oh, and if you want to have a repeat of this session, you can come to Madrid. We're repeating it there for Tech at Europe. So I might speak a little Spanish even there, you know, which would be funny. All right. Big moment. Drum rolls again. So how? That's the shuffling. Every speaker spoke about this fancy shuffling that's happening behind the scenes. Now I see what it is. It's really fancy, I can tell you. Yeah. It is.
All right, pick a card, any card.
All right, I think it's going to be this one. Let's see, that's Rick Gates. All right, we have a winner.